Chapter 5. Resurrection. The Fate of the Sigillite. Silver. Fire and death whirled around Loken, keening in a song that he knew all too well, and yet it still felt wrong to be fighting here. Since finding a purpose with the Knight's Errant, he had been called upon to shed blood on Terra's soil many times, but in each instance it had been a skirmish, a minor engagement, over in moments. This felt like the war. Although the birthplace of man was not the world where he was born, Loken had been raised, like many sons and daughters of the Imperium, to hold this planet in higher regard, to consider it as almost sacrosanct. In other times and places, that honouring might have been called holy, but there was little room for such things in the Emperor's secular dominions. Still, Terra, Old Earth, Gaia, Adem, Tellus, or whatever ancient name by which you wish to know it, held a place above all others as the cradle of humanity. Untouched by battle since the Emperor's great unification, it was meant to be the image in which the Imperium was to be forged. A war here, like this, amid the screaming thunder of guns and the clash of blades, was an offence to that ideal. The fallen Aeronefs blazed where they crashed into the snowy landscape, throwing up walls of acrid smoke that covered the approach of their passengers. Running into the lasguns of Malkador's Chosen at the outer markers, the horde did not slow, overwhelming the defenders and butchering them when their weapons ran hot and shut down. There were hundreds, perhaps thousands of them, humans, of course, and of questionable levels of skill, but they made up for their lack of ability by sheer force of numbers. Some were career soldiers, perhaps mercenaries or even law officers, and they knew their way around weapons. Most were the ragged and the destitute, an army stolen from the hidden populations of the junk hunter tribes and tech nomadics that lived outside the city hives of Terra. Loken wondered who had walked among them, and what oratory and tricks had been used to turn them to the War Master's banner. He wondered if it was warp sorcery that had done this, or was it just the clever application of pressure to the desperation of those who thought they were maligned and forgotten? For all the glory that the Emperor brought from the stars, it must have shone dull and distant for these motley dregs. Loken considered how they might see the great dream of the Imperium, not as the crusade to bring humanity to greatness, but as a wasteful effort led by elites who did not know their plight and did not care to. He killed them all the same, though, and without pity. For even as the warrior strove to understand what drove them into the traitor's grasp, Loken did not forgive it. His sword cut down a man in the carapace armour of the Imperial Army, the force of the blow slamming the bleeding corpse back at his cohorts, staggering them. Loken lost no momentum, extending his sweep and beheading the others. They fell into the slush around his boots, blood diluted by snowmelt into rose-coloured pools blooming at the foot of the White Mountain. Lasers flashed and bolt shells roared, stitching a deadly web of light and tracer across the ice and stone. The makeshift turncoat army came in, screaming Horus's name as a battle cry, funneled into close order by sharp-edged hillocks of bare granite. Beams shot from pillboxes at the perimeter of the great grey peak lanced out, but the bulk of the killing was being done by the Knight's Errant. After Loken's right, Varan was cackling and enjoying the brutality of the engagement more than was seemly. True to his previous statements, he had gone to the White Mountain's armory and torn an anti-personnel flame projector off the pintle mount of a hover tank. He stood in the middle of a perfect circle of blackened corpses, pivoting to incinerate anyone who strayed within range of the flamer's hissing nozzles. Whipping tails of brilliant promethium fire looped out and savaged the bodies of the attackers, the weapon growling as it worked. To the left, Galor was nothing but cold martial focus, moving and firing with textbook exactitude. As he deftly sidestepped the clumsy attacks of his foes, he put mass-reactive rounds into the midst of enemy packs, ensuring that those not killed instantly by impact or overpressure from the hits were felled by fragmentation from the fat bullet heads. And of course, Garrow was at the very tip of the spear. His sword caught sunlight as it wove patterns of murder through the air, culling without pause or mercy. Like Galor's, the battle captain's fighting style was simple, direct, and deadly. Loken guessed it was a Death Guard trait, in keeping with the obdurate, hard-edged manner of their combat tactics. Garrow's swordsmanship lacked the flair and showy grandstanding of Legion bladesmen such as those of the White Scars, Lunar Wolves, or the Sons of Fulgrim. But it was effective, as those who tried to fight him learned to their cost. Loken's own sword resonated in his gauntlet as he twisted to meet a new attacker, this one huge by human standards, but still a head shorter than the Space Marine. A chem-charged mutant of some kind, the man's face was a mass of scarification that turned his flesh into a distorted image of the Eye of Horus. His mouth of teeth, all filed to points, formed the arrow point of the sigil. Like the war master he followed, the brute carried a heavy mace with a spiked head. Against men, this one would have been fast and fearsome, but against Legion speed and Legion reflexes, he was moving in half-time. Loken caught the mace head and wrenched the weapon from his enemy's grip, but the haft was attached by chains to the brute's wrist, so the motion took his hand off with it. The look in the big man's eyes told the legionary that he had likely never lost a fight before this day, and only now did he understand he was not invincible, no matter what those who spread Horus's influence might have told him. Loken ended it quickly, cutting him down, his sword going to mid-breast before he pulled it. The brute's nerves misfired, and he staggered into his killer, broken pieces of his crude armour falling away to reveal a torn body beneath. Loken snarled and shoved the dying fool away, and his gaze caught the tone of the flesh. It was covered with countless crimson weals, like the bites of venomous insects, each leaking pus and shivering, as if something crawled beneath the blistering. Sickened, Loken reeled back and realized that his momentary distraction had allowed a new enemy to approach without being seen. This figure was the biggest yet, larger than the brute, matching the stature of any legionary of the line. Loken couldn't make out much more beyond that. The enemy was hunched forward, all detail of him lost beneath a heavy, rough-hewn cloak that seemed to suck in the daylight and smother it. This one conjured the gothic arrangement of the death that walks, the skeletal form in hood and robes from antiquity that remained a fixture of so many human cultures. Black dust puffed up in each step he took as the figure advanced towards Garrow. The battle captain was busy dispatching a brace of mech-augmented gunmen, weathering a fusillade of bullets from the muzzles of a dozen auto-stubbers. He did not see it coming. Loken shouted a warning and exploded into motion, ploughing through enemy ranks with his sword, drawing his bolter to firing position as he ran. Garrow heard the cry and finished his work on the gunman, turning to see. The thing beneath the cloak rose to its full height and provided Loken with an ample target. He let rip with a pair of bolt shells, but the attacker's shape instantly blurred and reshaped. Loken had the sudden impression of the solid, real cloak becoming smoky and vaporous. Garrow fired too, and the black mass denatured. It blew apart with the shrieking, ear-splitting buzz of a million insect wings, becoming a stifling swarm of glistening carrion-eater bugs. Now it was revealed in full. Loken looked upon a blackened, distorted figure that was some grotesque amalgam of a legionary's battle plate and the slick, shiny body of a giant mutant beetle. One arm was the claw of an arthropod, clacking madly, and where there should have been a face, there was only a clump of iridescent eyes above a maw of twitching spiked mandibles. It had a weapon in its more human hand, a short stabbing blade that was rust-brown and crumbling. "My captain," said the creature. The words carried not by its voice, but in the orchestrated humming of the swarm surrounding it. "I said I would return." Shock burned across Garrow's face. He knew this thing, knew it like a brother.
"Solon,
Loken saw the monstrous insect thing nod. It sold you. You cannot kill decay. I will take that bet, roared Varan. The former World Eater's legionary had heard Loken's warning and come to lend his might as well, brandishing his heavy flamer as he stormed into engagement range. Reflexively, Loken and Garrow fell to the flanks to allow Varan an unimpeded field of fire, but the creature the battle captain had called Solon did not make any moves to evade. Varan snarled and thumbed the flamer's firing stud, spraying a thick rope of white-hot inferno into the swarm cloak, directly at the warped figure within it. Huge clumps of carrion flies were reduced to sizzling cinders as they dived in to form a protective mantle before their master. But the flamer chewed them up and engulfed the insect thing. It became a living torch, the clinging fire sloughing off sheaves of chitinous material as it sprinted into the middle of the arc of attack. Roaring through the pain, the enemy waded through the flames, clearly in agony and yet undaunted by it. Varan's feral smile slipped off his scarred, bearded face like viscera dripping from a butcher knife as he saw the thing coming and knew it would not stop. The blackened, half-destroyed creature came into arm's reach and batted away the nozzle of the flamer with its human hand, even as the pincer claw shot out and snapped shut around Varan's neck. The knight-errant struggled and fought back, unleashing the full brutality of his legion. The fight was a rapid melee of shattering blows and unstoppable counter-strikes. Loken beat back another surge of rebels, momentarily losing sight of Varan's struggle, dispatching the humans as fast as he could in order to swing back and find a shot to put into the insect thing. The distraction cost him greatly. He was moving when he heard the stonebreak snap of fortified bone shattering. Garrow roared Varan's name and came thundering in with his sword held high, but the other warrior was already going slack, his neck at a horrid angle and dark blood gushing from his mouth. Varan stepped back, stumbling into Garrow's path as if he were dazed and trying to get his bearings. But the legionary's body was working on the last sparks of nerve impulses sent from a dying brain. He slumped, dropping the flame weapon, and crashed to his knees. Loken thought he saw something like a flash of surprise in Varan's fading gaze, before the glimmer of life was gone forever. From all around them, the monstrous swarm of flies dived at the warrior's still warm corpse, to feast upon his blood before it could cool. The Sigilite backed away, grasping the worn metal of his staff, and a small mutter of callous amusement escaped his lips.
"Ah! Of course, clever. Very clever."
He bowed his head to an unseen audience.
"You've done what none by your father could do, Lupercal. You have outplayed me."
He gave a theatrical sigh.
"I suppose I only have myself to blame. I have stretched myself so thin in recent days. It was just a matter of time before you put something past me."
The Warmaster didn't hear him, of course, but it seemed right to make the statement. Malkador felt a perverse sense of enjoyment at being right in his suspicions, with the final revelation that, yes, this entire charade had been one more among the dozens of intricate assassination attempts against him, directed by Horus's keen and callous intellect. That little shard of hope that he had held on to, the faintest sliver of faith that there might still be a way to end the war, turned to bitter dust. Tylos Rubio advanced on him. There was nothing but antipathy in the legionary's eyes, a raw and potent hatred of the kind that Malkador had only ever seen in zealots and converts. Rubio's glistening sword was aimed at Malkador's chest, the wicked edge ready to bury itself in flesh and cleave him in twain. But Rubio's murderous intent was not that of a cold-hearted assassin. It was there in his gaze. It was the killing urge of the righteous crusader. He wanted to execute the Sigilite because Malkador deserved to die. And there was truth to that view. But how had it been done, he wondered. Was there a telepathic cantrip of such incredible subtlety at play here that even the Sigilite could not have sensed it? Despite all the times he had read Rubio's thoughts. He dismissed that idea as soon as he conceived of it. No. The ruinous powers did not have the keenness of skill to create such a thing. And even if they had, in this place, any psionic or sorcerous alteration of the ultramarine's mind would be undone. No. This was something far simpler, and ironically, more complex. Rubio's hatred was truthful, old and long buried, but only now returned to the surface. Perhaps the architects of this act had found something real from the warrior's past life and made that the foundation of the rage he now felt towards Malkador.
How would I have done it? He pondered the question. I would have searched out and twisted some long-forgotten emotion into a dark and hateful mirror of its former self. A childhood memory of trauma, or of a parent's love. Weaponized it. Yes. Then honed it, and then left it to fester for years.
Malkador's cold smile widened. He had done things like that, and worse still, from time to time, in the wars before this one. But in his arrogance, the Sigilite now saw that the lessons he had taught Horus were not the ones he thought he had.
The boy always was a quick study, he muttered.
There was a kind of clockwork perfection to the ideal of this, that Malkador would die in the bowels of some bleak and stony labyrinth at the hand of someone he thought he could control. It was a delicious irony that the Sigilite imagined the War Master was only too aware of.
He intends to laugh at me when it is done, thought Malkador. He will not grant me the honour of a face-to-face death by his hand.
And that might be just and right, he reflected. The Sigilite was a liar and a plotter, a master of assassins. He was a schemer and a poisoner. So what right did he have to expect an honourable ending? There would be no heroic last stand for him, no mythic clash to be recalled across the ages in song and story. There would be no one to witness this. He was to die in shadows, surrounded by the maddened and the broken. Horus wanted Malkador to perish in the deepest, most distant silence. With his immense mental powers subdued, Malkador was only a very old man. The duration of his ill-lived life extended against nature and fate by juvenat tech and body modifications. But Rubio, rendered telepathically inert by the psi-negating aura of the White Mountain's technologies, combined with the dozens of pariahs crowded all around them, was still a monstrous killing engine. The captive sisters in the cages said nothing, but Malkador could hear the faint rush of them breathing in unison. Their presence was a heavy psychic fog on the horizon of his preternatural senses, a wall of gloom that shut out everything else. The novelty of being temporarily rendered mind-mute was quickly fading. He became aware of his heart thudding in his chest, the constriction of the bio-augment collar around his neck, and the low crackle of the plasmatic flame in the iron basket atop his staff. Each sensation took on a depth and colour beyond the norm, as if his mind were seeing new ranges to them, now that his more ephemeral senses were lost to him.
If I ask, will you tell me why you wish me to die?
At last he spoke directly to his executioner in waiting. I know what you are, said Rubio. I think I have always known. I saw it a long time ago. But only now do I remember.
Horus did this to you.
Malkador made the attempt to dissuade him, but he was cursory about it, going through the motions. The programming would not be easy to disrupt. He glanced at one of the silent sisters.
If Horus's agents could break them, they could remake a legionary. You know that?
Rubio shook his head.
This is not about him. This is about you.
The sword in his hand shifted.
Once, long ago, I saw what you were going to do to the galaxy. How you were going to change it. I glimpsed the plans you have that even the Emperor doesn't know of.
Malkador froze. briefly perturbed by the certainty of the warrior's assertion. Was that possible? Then he shook off the thought. No. There were some places where even the most powerful psychic in the universe could not look.
I know what you want to do after Horus is defeated. I remember. That truth has been hiding in my mind for a long time. So it is better you die here. Better you are forgotten.
Are you truly ready to kill me, Tylos?
Malkador said quietly.
I believe...
Rubio began, his brow furrowing as he chased down the mercurial thought.
I believe I have always been ready to do that.
The legionary came at him in a blur, and Malkador was barely able to swing the staff around quickly enough to defend himself. Touching a hidden control caused the grumbling ornamental flames atop it to rise to become a shrieking fireball that jetted out through the frosty air. Normally, the sigillite would have been able to telekinetically guide the churning plasma in any direction, but here the superheated gas struck the target off-beam. Rubio shielded his face with his arm, and the flames rolled over his slate-coloured battle armour, slagging the upper layers of ceramite where they touched. Grey became soot-black, and waves of spent heat vibrated in the air. But the legionary did not lose a step. His sword slashed right to left and struck the haft of the black iron staff with incredible force, knocking it out of Malkador's grip with enough power to shock him back into a half-stumble. Every fighting reflex in the sigillite was honed towards the instant use of his immense psionic talents. But now those instincts were like pulling the trigger on a useless breech-jammed pistol. He raised one hand in a warding motion, the other clutching a fistful of robes at his chest. Stop! Bellowed Malkador, summoning all the raw force of personality he could draw on.
I am the Regent of Terror, and you will obey me.
Rubio had already reoriented his sword to commit a downward executioner's blow.
I am here to do this, said the legionary, nodding to himself. The message, my recruitment, my entire life, all leading to now.
You have no right to judge me.
The words slipped out, surprising Malkador even as he uttered them. He couldn't stop himself.
I regret nothing I have done. Nothing.
That is a lie, said Rubio. I remember your face when you let Wintour fall to his death. You regretted that. And I know there is more.
There is,
the sigillite wanted to say. But the sword was already diving towards his chest, aimed to slice through his heart. The tip of the blade met an invisible barrier a hand's span above Malkador's chest, causing a sudden flare of blue-white radiation as the force of the blow was instantly reversed in full and redirected back at its origin point. Rubio was hit by the hammer of his own attack and slammed back, his boots cutting scores in the stone as he tried to resist it. Malkador rose of his own accord and without support, dropping all pretenses. As he moved, his robe fell open to reveal the metal icon hanging on a chain from his augment collar. Forged in the shape of the sigillite's mark, the device glowed with an inner fire, and he reached up to trace a pattern on its surface. His sly, hooded gaze met that of the legionary.
Did you really think it would be that simple to end me?
An ashen pulse of raw despair passed through Garrow's chest. The emotion felt like hearts momentarily seizing as he watched Mesa Varan fall. For an instant, the sense of desolation was utter and perfect.
How many more would have to die before this war was at an end? The question tolled like a dolorous bell.
The World Eater had not been a legion brother to Garrow. He had been at best a respected ally. But still, the acerbic gladiator's end was offensive to the knight-errant. Varan's killing was only one more in the unfolding battle, and Garrow knew that at this very second there were other legionaries across the galaxy engaged in other conflicts, dying in the same moment on dozens of worlds. And that was the great scope of the transgression. That was the monumental, dishonourable horror of it. The Legiones Astartes, the demigod transhumans bred to unite mankind and bring order out of anarchy, had been reduced to this. The rage in Garrow expressed itself in a thundering roar from the depths of his chest, and he attacked Varan's killer with all his fury. The creature, this so-called Lord of Flies, reacted with shock and fought back, blocking the fall of Libertas with a clumsy parry and making the attempt to stab Garrow with its rusted plague knife. Garrow snared the creature's wrist and broke it, the jabbing underhand blow becoming weak and useless, the corrupted blade slumping. With the pommel of his sword, Garrow directed a salvo of bullet-quick hits into the face of the thing, smashing its spidery jaws and reducing its ugly aspect to a ruin of blackened, broken chitin. Each piece of skull and flesh that broke off it disintegrated into a myriad of motile flecks that buzzed angrily away, drawn up and back to fill any gaping wounds and clot the flow of inky, syrupy ichor. Heedless to the rest of the skirmish going on at the foot of the White Mountain, Garrow's attention was now solely fixed on the creature before him. Galor, Loken, and Malkador's chosen armsmen could deal with the turncoats from the crashed Aeronefs, but this thing would be his alone to destroy.
"I killed you on Luna,"
Garrow spat, advancing on the Lord of Flies as it scrambled to put distance between them.
"I threw your desiccated corpse into the sun. How can you be here? How can you live still?"
"The Octet Path carries this one to glory,"
the droning swarm voice sounded in Garrow's bones.
"And the Grandfather is so very generous with his gifts."
"If I must destroy you again, I will," Garrow roared back. "And if need be, I will do so every time you return from whatever foul origin spawned you."
"Then your war will be longer than you can comprehend, animal."
The creature gathered itself and turned its popped mess of a face in his direction.
"The pestilence existed before your meat kind dragged themselves from the ooze. It will be here when the last stars darken."
Even as he closed the gap between them, Garrow could see the Lord of Flies' terrible wounds knitting themselves closed, the destruction wrought over it rebuilding at a speed that the accelerated constitution of a legionary could not match. Garrow took a breath of the cold air, blood-specked snow crunching beneath the heel of his augmetic leg as he fell into a fighting stance.
"Solon Decius was a good lad. Whatever poison you are, you robbed him of his potential. For that alone, you deserve 1,000 deaths."
"Decius!"
The creature broke into gales of obscene cackling laughter. It jabbed its claw hand at its chest.
"This vessel isn't that flesh, you moribund fool. You pitched him into a star, remember?"
The Lord of Flies' ugly aspect blurred and shifted, the particles of it drawing back to reveal a human face beneath, the core over which the wretched thing had built itself.
"Remember, Nathaniel?"
This time the voice was a familiar one, emerging from the lips of a pallid corpse.
"Merrick?"
Surprise seized Garrow's breath.
"No."
"I found his body where you left it,"
buzzed the swarm.
"It fits me well."
The flies massed around Merrick Voyan's head, writhing and glittering.
"What did you expect, Captain? You executed your own man, your friend. The Grandfather took pity on him, gave him to me."
"You soulless wretch!"
Garrow's cold disgust hung in the air.
"How dare you defile his memory? I will make you pay for that."
"Staunch your own guilt first, Death God,"
the Lord of Flies spat back. And the worst of it was, Garrow could not. In the aftermath of his escape to Terra aboard the starship Eisenstein, bearing a warning of Horus's treachery, many of Garrow's loyal brothers had suffered. Solon Decius had fallen to ruin and transformation, but Merrick Voyan's fate had been to be broken in spirit by the horrors he witnessed. Poor, pure of heart Merrick, hoping against all odds that he might turn his skills as a Legion apothecary towards curing the plague of undeath that was poised to infect their wayward comrades. Voyan had recovered the corpse of the Lord of Flies after Garrow had first killed it on the surface of Terra's moon, believing it might hold the answer to a cure. but all it brought him was infection and a certain end. His hope became his ruin. Garrow would never forget the act he had been forced to commit, with this sword in his hand and with great sorrow in his heart.
"I granted Merrick the Emperor's peace," he whispered. "The contagion was already in him. It was that or allow my battle brother to be consumed."
The Lord of Flies spread its arms.
"Your failure is complete, then. You didn't save him, Garrow. You doomed Voyen to become my vessel."
The squirming horde of crawling things marched over the dead man's face, filling his mouth and nostrils, hardening again into a monstrous aspect.
"But I do grow bored with him.
I think next I will take host in you. Yes, that will be fitting."
"You may make the attempt,"
Garrow snarled, but the creature paid him no heed. Raising its head to the sky, the monster let out a piercing screech that seemed to vibrate down through the air and into the frost-rimed ground beneath Garrow's feet. Blackened snow and grey earth churned with unnatural force, and everywhere the slush and ice broke apart as thousands of fat, corpse-white maggots erupted from below. Each was as big as a man's arm, and their slime-slick, throbbing bodies ended in eyeless lamprey maws, filled with yellowed needle fangs. For an instant, they joined in the chorus, and then the grotesque, smothering tide thrashed blindly towards the Knight's Errant and the survivors of the Chosen. He was an old man, heavy with the weight of centuries, to the degree that it was impossible for most observers to begin to guess at the Sigilite's age. Malkador was a rarity, a human that had passed beyond a horizon of being, to a point where concepts like mortality became unwieldy and inapplicable. But there was no decrepitude in him, at least not in this moment. While his spindly robe-wrapped form seemed waif-like and unthreatening before the mass of a fully armoured space marine, there was no diminishment at hand.
"I do not die with ease," he told the former ultramarine. "I've learned that lesson the hard way."
Malkador looked away, thinking again of the being who had set this in motion. Was it Horus? Or someone else?
"Are you so desperate that this is the only end game you can play?"
Malkador wasn't speaking to Rubio, or to himself. He addressed the question to the air.
"A sordid murder attempt, hidden from all eyes. A wizened old warlock ran through, speared on a sword as if he were a piece of overcooked meat."
The Sigilite laughed.
"So many foolish assumptions, bred from a mind that lacks the experience of its betters, yes? Because your masters must have known."
His smile faded, and he looked down at his long bony fingers.
"One cannot exist beyond a certain threshold of psychic power without being forever changed by it. Look at me. Look at my years. Every molecule of my being, soaked in the aura of the Empyrean for so long. I fell beyond the scope of humanity long ago. So how could you hope to kill me as you would a man, even after robbing me of my gifts? How?"
Lost in the wilds of his fury, Rubio attacked him again and again, each time clashing his gladius against the impregnable force wall emitted by the microscopic conversion field generator in Malkador's icon. Every blistering sword blow was reversed with a brilliant flash of light in its wake, and the Sigilite took them as easily as he would have a fall of raindrops. The power of the device, a miracle of technology from before the Age of Strife, often made Malkador speculate on what wonders that lost era had contained. In a small way, it pained him to use the generator in so crude a manner as this. It had been made for greater things, but those possibilities were dust and forgotten. Rubio put all his effort into a final attack that reflected against him with such power that it knocked the sword from his grip. The weapon clattered against the stone floor, and Malkador saw his opening.
"Now then,"
he he said.
We'll get to the heart of this.
The sigilite moved quickly, pressing the icon to Rubio's chest plate before the warrior could react. White light flared from the device, and he shrank back as Rubio was wreathed in an aurora of jagged lightning. Gravity multiplied and forced the legionary to his knees, holding him there under a hundredfold of his own weight.
He's tried to kill me so often it has gone beyond tiresome.
Malkador gave a grunt as he stooped to reach for Rubio's sword, getting his hands around the massive grip.
But each time I have to step into the trap. To know, you see? To know if I am worthy of surviving it.
With effort, Malkador hauled the weapon off the floor. The sword was almost as tall as he was.
And this time... well, damn him if he didn't bait the snare with hope. Clever bastard.
The sigilite lifted Rubio's sword until the tip of it rested on the legionary's neck ring. He would only need to put his weight behind it to send the weapon through Rubio's throat and finish him. The legionary could not speak, but Malkador reacted as if he had.
Do you think this is what he wanted, Tylos? Even if you fail and I stand here, your sword in my hand, he still scores a victory. I die, and you are killed because of it. I survive, and I kill you. One death or two he still gains, because he knows your value as much as mine.
Malkador steeled himself and got better purchase on the blade's hilt. Then, rather than end the knight errant, he pulled it away and walked to the cells where the silent sisters waited in their blank-gazed torpor. The power of the restricting field meant that Rubio could not even move his eyes, forcing him to only look ahead. But at the edges of his vision, he saw the movement of the cell doors opening at Malkador's command, and he saw the first of the bodies fall. He heard the song of the blade he knew so well, hissing through stale air and human flesh. There were no cries, of course, but the gush and spatter of slit throats had a sound all of their own. As each sister was dispatched, the telepathic fog abated by degrees, but it meant nothing to Rubio. The glowing device affixed to his chest was negating all energy conduction in his armour, from the flex-metal power musculature of his arms and legs to the sire-tuned crystals of his psychic hood. He could do nothing but wait and witness, trapped in the amber of reborn rage. At length, Malkador moved back into his field of sight. His terracotta robes were spattered with splashes of crimson, his hands red with murder. The sigilite let Rubio's gladius drop, and he came face to face with him.
"Now then,"
he said, as colour returned to the old man's cheeks,
"why don't we see how this all began, yes?"
"No," Rubio wanted to say, but that reaction was built upon fear. Old primal terror from his childhood, the dark and shapeless shadow of a forgotten terror experienced by the unfinished mind of a babe in a crib. Something buried so deep it was never to be remembered, but not so lost that a keen and hateful soul could not dredge it up and weaponize it. Malkador cupped Rubio's twitching face in his blood-slicked hands and pushed. All the way back to Kalth. This was the place. A blasted wilderness of seared grassland beneath a dying star, kilometres outside the lines of defence, set up upon the railhead that led to Numinous City. Rough cones of old rock forming shallow canyons, the fading winds of a thinning atmosphere. Rubio and the others were out there on a reconnaissance sortie. The 21st Company had fallen back to this zone, bloodied and shocked by the brutal treachery of the Sons of Lorgar, and now the Ultramarines dealt with the horror of that sedition by returning to what they knew best, their tactics. The orders from Captain Gaius were clear. Lone legionaries spread out in a Finger Five deployment, each covering a sweep zone, searching for any sign of the word-bearers or the hordes of insane auxilia they had brought with them. It gave Brother Rubio and the others something to occupy their minds, something other than the question of why the 17th Legion had chosen to break their oaths. The first shots of the rebellion fell here, and he did not know it. But he would, in time. All the galaxy would learn the truth. Their use forbidden by the Edict of Nicaea, Rubio felt lost without his psionic abilities, and in reflecting on that, his distraction cost him dearly.
There you are.
In this memory he did not remember, Rubio whirled, bringing up his bolter to fire. Behind him, a figure in armour the colour of congealed blood, his face revealed in the weak light as if it were a parchment covered with lines of arcane symbols. The words defeated understanding, squirming out from under his comprehension.
This is the one,
said the word-bearer, as if conversing with someone only he could perceive.
It doesn't look like anything to me.
Rubio attempted to pull the trigger of his bolter, but no part of him could move. His eye was drawn to a glow in the offhand of the traitor legionary. A mote of eldritch warp fire held there by the cage of his fingers in ritual pattern. He knew the word-bearer then. Erebus, said another voice, coming at him from outside the memory. Of course.
You don't seem special, Ultramarine,
Erebus was saying, coming closer, removing his gauntlets so he could touch the flesh of Rubio's face with his bare fingers.
But I have learned not to question them. What the Octed knows of your path and where you will end up is all that matters.
He leaned in, and unspeakable pain exploded across all of Rubio's sensorium.
What do you have that I can use, I wonder? Let me see.
In real time, it took only seconds, but in the non-space of the mind, an eternity unfolded. Imagine a bathysphere descending into the abyssal deeps of a fathomless ocean. Thus was Erebus as he fell into Rubio's memories, searching back and back to the most primal of them, seeking the Ur-fear formed in his mind before he had known true sentience. Then, with the skill of cruelty's artisan, Erebus stitched that primitive terror to its red twin, to raw fury. He gave it Malkador's face as the root, and sealed it within a shell of words, waiting for the day.
Such pride and arrogance in your breed, Rubio,
said Erebus as he withdrew, the deed done.
It will amuse me to think of you as no better than a servitor, waiting for the right trigger command.
He showed a mouthful of teeth.
That will amuse me a great deal.
And then he was gone, and the moment had never happened, swallowing itself, becoming nothing, hiding. Hiding until...
We can't have that.
Malkador's fingers slipped through the matter of Rubio's flesh until he was touching the substrata of his raw psyche. Now it had blossomed, it was easy to see where Erebus had hidden the trigger for the hate bomb that had lain inert for years in Rubio's mind. The sigillite had a grudging admiration for the ploy. It showed a subtlety on the word-bearer's part that he had not thought Lorgar's lackey to be capable of. But then again, he imagined it was more the voices that had whispered to him from the void behind such a tactic than Erebus himself. He kept Rubio suspended in negative time as he gauged the depth and intricacy of the mnemonic implant. It wove around elements of the Codicea's core self, his superego, and the surface layers of Ultramarine's hypnagogic programming. All were pieces of Tylos Rubio that could not be easily excised without collapsing the whole. The simplest solution would be to euthanize, of course, but then that would upset the balance of the project on Titan. And although Malkador had built a degree of redundancy into the scheme, if the choice came down to it, he didn't want to lose this particular one. Up on the Eagle's Highway, when Malkador had halted him, the sigillite had seen into Rubio's heart. That kind of purity and devotion was impossible to fabricate. So, with the greatest care, Malkador retraced Erebus's path and undid his works. Rubio choked, and his tripartite lungs quaked inside his ribcage as they sucked in a gale of cold air. He blinked furiously, trying to get his bearings. He was on his knees, in the holding chamber within the White Mountain. He tasted blood and the acid tang of spent ectoplasm.
"Steady, lad," said Malkador, standing a few metres away.
He held himself up on his staff, the crackling flames in the iron basket atop it giving his face a hard cast.
"You lost a step there, I think."
"Aye." Rubio felt wrung out and cold, but he shook off the sensation and rose. Before him, he saw the silhouette of his sword lying in a spill of crimson, and beyond it a line of dead bodies. The lost pariah sisters, all executed. He knew immediately that it had been by his weapon. "What happened?"
"You don't remember?"
Malkador sucked in a breath through his teeth.
"Psi shock, perhaps. Such effects can obliterate short-term memory chains."
Rubio looked back towards the hatchway and found it hanging open, stained with human vitae. The scientician Brell lay off to one side, unmoving.
"The last thing I recall is the door opening."
He trailed off. Beyond that point, Rubio's eidetic memory was a seamless negative space. He tried to grasp at the threads of it, but there was nothing there.
"It was the trap we knew it would be."
Malkador became solemn.
"The sisters attacked us. It appears they were mentally programmed in some fashion. You took the sword to them."
He gave a nod.
"Rubio, you saved my life."
"Yes."
He frowned, lost in the moment.
"I don't recall it."
Rubio's face clouded as he gathered up his sword and cleaned off the blade. There was something else missing, something he couldn't find a shape for. His only way to define it was by the void it left behind, and that was insufficient.
"Horus engineered this event to destroy us both," continued the Sigillite. "That was his intent. Kill me and take you off the board into the bargain."
"Why would I matter?"
The question fell from him unbidden. The hollow sensation in Rubio's mind made him feel bleak and distant. Malkador approached and looked up at him.
"Because you have so much yet to do, my friend."
The Sigillite offered Rubio something, and he took it. A silver disc, the same as the ones he had seen on the table in Malkador's private quarters. Turning it over, Rubio revealed a name etched there in high Gothic script.
"Koyos," he read aloud.
The same name Jotun had addressed him with.
"I don't understand. What does this mean?"
"Make your peace with it."
Malkador's face faded into the depths of his hood.
"Soon, that will be who you are."